Oh, yes. Battered Earth by Sweet Honey in the Rock. And that brings us to my guest, Patty Clary, yes, of Californians for Alternatives to Toxics. Hi, Patty.
Hi, Arnold. How you doing?
Well, very good. Thank you. And welcome to COWS.
Thank you.
I first met you about 15 years ago or so.
Santa Rosa, I think.
Yes, in Santa Rosa. I was living in San Francisco at the time, but you just put out that Time for a Change, Pesticides and Wine Grapes in Sonoma and Napa Counties. And
we did.
That was the first, I was just reading it again, and that was the first one ever to come out on that particular subject.
It was, and we'd love to go back and revisit it, and perhaps we will eventually. In fact, I'm sure we will eventually revisit that topic. Things have changed a lot in wine country, so be a different story this time.
Well, especially, I mean, not just what they're using, but also just the, it must be doubled the acreage even now, I would imagine, since then.
It's a tremendous amount of acreage, but also in the ownership, a lot of it has changed. Hmm. At the time we wrote that report, wine grapes in the North Coast were mostly small holdings of people who, you know, lived here a long time. Mm. Now we have a lot of big corporations involved, so I think the face has changed a bit. And you have to wonder, when you're dealing with a big corporation, how responsive they might be.
Well, exactly. It seems to be, it comes up not just sometimes, every time, that
That's
responsiveness,
right.
Isn't it? And, of course, governmental bodies as well, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. We'll talk about that a bit as well. But CATS, Californians for Alternatives to Toxics, what is that term? Where did it start, and what was the inspiration for that?
Well, you know, CATS grew out of a very, probably the biggest unifying environmental issue that's ever rocked Northern California. Mm. And that was in the 70s, when a lot of people had moved out of cities and were going back to the land and all that. And that coincided with the timber companies and the Forest Service just spraying the living daylights out of the forests all over Northern California. They were spraying herbicides because they, with technology and improved equipment and all that, they had really upped the cut in the forests of Northern California, Northern and Central California. And so to sort of keep up with it, they had introduced a very industrial approach to forestry, which they were using herbicides, a lot of herbicides, and they were flying in with helicopters and doing that. And that created a firestorm of public response. And CATS emerged out of that with the 28 counties that had groups, many of them, multiple groups in any county, came together and formed, made a formal organization that was CATS. So CATS really was formally organized about 1982, but it came out of a good 8 or 9 years of strong activism in Northern California.
Mm. Yeah, very rarely things come from nowhere.
That's right.
A lot of footwork got things to that place. Yes.
Yes. And so that was the issue that was the unifying one, the formative issue for CATS. And then eventually, as people became, that were involved in this issue, became more aware, a lot of people went very deeply into learning about forestry and what was being done and becoming very strong forest activists. Mm. And others went on and also learned more about the kind of toxic exposures we were having in our world. Mm. So then CATS turned its attention not away from forestry, because that's been a pretty continual topic for the organization, but into other, became involved in other pesticide uses that were going on in our world that were impacting people. And the, probably the second one really surfaced with organic farmers who lived near state highways and the roadside spraying that was going on. So that was a second issue. So it's just kind of snowballed from there.
Interesting, yes, but with a common purpose.
Yes, and the common purpose to be, we're a membership organization, so it's to protect our members and to help help our members, the clearinghouse, so that we can achieve control over the use of toxic chemicals in our environment.
How much does it cost to become a member?
It's really very inexpensive. It's still only $20. And so we encourage people to join because we need to have members from all over so that we can have people that are keeping their finger on the pulse of what's going on in our part of the world.
Well, and that's it. Is this, I mean, obviously it's a citizen-based organization, but do you get literally lay people feedback? Is that how you gather information? How is that, how do you do that?
Well, when it comes to what's going on out there that's affecting people, yes, directly. I mean, I can give you an example that's very close into your neighborhood, which is just recently we've learned that Apple Blossom School over in Sebastopol, yeah, there's a vineyard conversion happening there from an apple orchard to a vineyard. And it just happens that this apple orchard to vineyard has about 700 children going to school in very close proximity. There's Apple Blossom School, which is immediately adjacent, and then three other schools, charter schools and private schools, 700 kids all together. So there's a lot of concern right now there. In fact, I've only been contacted in just this week and have been working with people over there and are pulling together resources from our network of experts and knowledgeable people to try to help with this situation. Of course, we're dealing with a very smart group of people over there, and the Spassable folks.
Yeah,
and sophisticated. But, you know, that's the thing is, an organization like ours, because we're focused and have a big network, we're able to help people move very quickly into being able to take steps to protect themselves, their families, their community, when something like this comes up.
Well, it's, you know, it's interesting, that one, because I know in the past I've read studies about spraying maybe in the Central Valley where there's been schools nearby, but I don't think I've heard one in a more sort of area like this where that's happening. So that's interesting.
It happens in Sonoma County. That was one of the things from our wine grape report was that we did some years ago is that we found out that there were 14 schools where some pretty high levels of airborne type pesticides were being used within a quarter of a mile of the schools. But in the intervening years, the legislature has made it possible for agriculture commissioners of counties to take special preventative steps and impose some restrictions in order to protect school children from pesticide use that goes on right adjacent to where they are.
And do
still
they,
not protective enough, but
that's it. Do they take those steps is the key, isn't it?
Right, exactly, because it's a discretionary thing. They're not, they don't have to. So basically what, you know, what you find in, and really what CATS grows from is a grassroots approach, because people have to get together, go to their neighbors, talk to the people that are affected, organize, and be political, basically. And being political means you have to go to your elected officials and press hard for what you want.
And continually.
That's right.
Not we just once.
We don't get to just sit back.
Your involvement, what brought you into this field, and what inspired you to join CATS?
Well, back when I was, I lived in Southern Oregon for about 8 or 9 years, just in an absolutely beautiful paradise place filled with wildlife. It's gorgeous. And they started cutting there and trees, and the next thing we knew, it turned into sort of a hellacious situation where they were spraying Agent Orange on the forest around us, and which is a mixture of 2,4-D and 2,4-5-T, in case there's still anyone around who remembers that, when the defoliant that was used in Vietnam very heavily to clear jungles so that the pilots flying above could see the Viet Cong. Didn't work very well. Still lost that war. But they managed to defoliate very intensively vast swaths of jungle. I think eventually it grew back. But the problem with it was is that 2,4-5-T was contaminated with one of the most toxic substances ever created by humankind, which is dioxin. And we don't hear a lot about dioxin today, but that doesn't mean it isn't still the most toxic compound after products of radiation that humans have created. And it lasts forever. And it's a terrible, terrible toxic chemical. So that was being used on the forest in southern Oregon where I was living. And unbeknownst to us, and until we got very, very ill, and a lot of our neighbors, and in fact, I almost died, and then my kids became very ill, and there were many years of exaggerated illnesses that were very difficult to deal with after. But that brought me into it, and I discovered that they were spraying Agent Orange around us, and became very active in the community to try to stop that, helped found Northwest Coalition for Alternatives to Pesticides, which still exists up in Eugene, and just started working on the issue. But didn't really plan to make it into a career kind of a thing, Arnold. You know, it was just an accident that it turned into a career because I just started working on it. And to stop it in my own personal neighborhood and organizing, and I did that for a few years. But it grew into being more than that over time.
A life choice, something that you're dedicated to, obviously.
Right. I think sometimes you get to... it's almost like you get to know enough about something that... it's like, okay, now I can't really give it up because I've learned so much about it that, you know, but oops, I really didn't mean to do this. I had other plans. That's sort of the story of my involvement, how I got involved in this.
Yeah, it's often, that is the way, often the best way maybe. You don't realize what you're doing until it's too late.
I guess, right. But then I have been able to make working on this be what I had wanted to do with my life. So I had more of a bent toward being an anthropologist. So I've been able to bring it in and make my work be what I had in my mind for my path. So, you know, that makes it very rewarding, and I don't regret what's happened, and I'm glad that I've been involved with cats, and it's been the people I've met and the things I've been able to accomplish have really been rewarding.
No, wonderful, incredible work. I mean, just we can touch on the getting information is so key for you. Like from the government, I know that's you were really pioneering in prizing information from the state amongst other agencies. How does that work for you, and what's that been like?
That's very interesting because California actually has probably the strongest laws in the world for transparency and information from government, and it's still a tremendous hassle and way beyond what it should be to get the information that we need. But for pesticides, we do have a very special kind of a informational system in California where if people are going to use pesticides in agriculture mm-hmm. or other commercial situations, they have to get licensed, they have to take classes, they have to pass a test, and they have to report their pesticide use to the county agriculture commissioner.
Mm.
And those figures are compiled, and we've been doing that in California since 1990. It's not a perfect system, but it's pretty darn good. And it's really the best in the world, actually, which gives us insight to what and where pesticides are being used in California, what amounts, right down to the field.
Wow, beautiful.
And you know, every year when the pesticide use reports come out and I go through it, I'm just so dismayed. You know, it feels like, oh, we've done all this work and tried so hard and all the wonderful people who are out there that have really put a lot of effort into trying to get things changed. And it has changed, and it is, we are seeing some changes occur, but just not fast enough at all. Regarding things like issues like pesticides, is I keep hoping that one day all of a sudden it's just going to turn. It'll slip over. But it hasn't done that yet. We still have a mindset of a lot of people that they have to be at war with nature. They haven't really figured out that there are people who are doing it a different way and doing it well.
Well, that's it. Yeah, in that that wine report of pesticide uses, I mean, you had people who were growing organically next to people who were just flooding their fields with various chemicals, and they were both getting good outputs. I mean, you know, that was for me was the most startling things. There seemed to be no need for the usage.
Right, and that was like, a decade and a half ago?
Yeah.
So we really need to pick up the pace of changing this thing in our society. And you know, that means people need to have it in mind. They need to have it in mind when they're buying food or buying wine or whatever mm-hmm. they're doing. They really need to make that extra effort to be part of what's going to bring about this change.
We talk about grapes, as we're talking about the Apple Blossom School in Sebastopol, where they're talking about putting grapes in. What are the common chemicals, and are they putting on grapes in Sonoma County?
Well, the pesticides that are being used in Sonoma County on grapes have definitely changed over the years. But they're still using some very strong chemicals for killing mites. Hmm. There are some miticides that are pretty overwhelming. But we have seen people learning and putting to use some alternatives. People think of alternatives to pesticides as being using another softer pesticide. Hmm. But, for example, for mites and the terrible pesticides they use to kill them, the alternative is to not raise dust.
Huh.
Dust and hot weather cause mites.
Mm.
And there's a lot of other just practices. And I think there has been some effort, definitely, and some people that have really made a tremendous effort in the wine world to look at things differently and change their practices and reduce their pesticide use, and even for many to, particularly in Mendocino County and some parts of Sonoma County, to stop using those hard chemicals and become organic, or become organic in practice if not certified.
Right.
With that too.
Right.
But you still have people using some pretty intense pesticides. There's some air toxics that are used, and
did you say air toxics?
Yes, things that are listed as toxic air contaminants, so that when they're sprayed or pumped into the ground or however they're used, are very, you know, get into the atmosphere and can drift about and be invisible.
Mm.
You know, you can't. That's the thing about pesticides, is pesticides are basically invisible.
Yeah.
Only rarely do you actually see something that lets you know, or smell something that lets you know that you're being exposed to a toxic chemical. So people don't realize it's really not in human nature to see what's not there, to go somewhere and see, oh, there's no birds, or there's no grass on the ground, or there's no butterflies. You know, it's hard for us to see the world that way. But that's what pesticides do. Herbicides, insecticides, all the pesticides, they sort of sterilize the environment around us.
Well, that's a good point. Yeah, I interviewed Bernie Krause, a sound guy, a few years back, and he went all around the world recording just natural settings. And now when he goes back, it's literally, as you say, it's become sterile. I mean, it is just, we've really done a good job.
Well, and you know, I have a theory, and I think that I know that there are some pretty well-advanced scientists who share this theory. I don't know why we don't see more of it being studied and broached, but on a serious level. But I think when you kill all these wildly diverse organisms in our environment, the natural ones, it makes it really easy for these invasive species to come in and find a niche. And so by us killing all the insects that were here, us, our societies, when I say us, what it's done is it's sterilized the environment. Well, nature is a biological vacuum, and nature is going to pull something in to fill it up. And so what we're filling up with right now are a lot of undesirable organisms. We've been doing that for quite a while. So that's one of the byproducts of sterilizing the environment, is it's not going to stay sterile. What's going to come in and fill the void are probably things we don't really want to have there.
Very good point. California is fairly, you know, up there in terms of almost a model compared to other countries or states. I mean, in other states, I mean, are there like no regulations for chemical reporting? I mean, is it as bad as that, or
it's as bad as that.
Oh dear.
Yeah. And the federal EPA, and I just have never been able to understand this. And we've recommended to them, of course, you know, joining with others, that they need to collect pesticide data nationally. I mean, how, I don't even know how they can have an enforceable Endangered Species Act program, for example, or any other thing, anything else, because those sources they use for information on pesticide use data outside of California, primarily New York, has pesticide use data. It's not anywhere near as comprehensive as California's. Oregon has a program, but the legislature doesn't fund it, so it doesn't do anything. So there's some smattering of pesticide use reporting nationally, but the EPA has to depend on things like trade journals, you know, and calling up pesticide salespeople. That kind of thing
is
terribly lame. And, you know, it's really, it just...
That is pathetic.
It's terrible. It's horrible.
Oh, my goodness.
How can anything really improve, if, you know, but of course, you know, what we have are the loudmouths in our country who want smaller government. We all know what that means.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, they didn't bring back the EPA inspectors they laid off in the sequesters, did they?
Yeah, I guess not. Mm-hmm. So, right. So that's the situation, is we have, you know, we have a poor regulatory scheme in the first place, and then not enough teeth to enforce what we have.
Yeah, and that's really where CATS really has to come in and provide really protection for the public. I mean, you're working on a number of different projects. There's some very interesting one looking at the one close to us, the North Coast Railroad Authority project. Can you tell us what you're working on that one?
Right. Well, what we have is the North Coast Railroad Authority, which has a railroad from Lombard over Napa County through Marin, through Sonoma, up to through Windsor and Healdsburg, and on up to Willits in Mendocino County, and just going on up, ending up in Humboldt County in Arcata. It's a long railroad line, and it's very old, and it's a mess. It is the only railroad that's ever been shut down in the United States due to safety concerns.
Oh, my goodness.
Completely shut down about 12 years ago.
Wow.
And it has slides, slid out parts. It has toxic chemicals in the ground, very, very toxic rail depots, falling apart, crumbling infrastructure. Something like from just Lombard to Willits, I believe there's 121 crossings over streams, rivers, creeks, seeps, that kind of thing. So there's a lot of water, and we all know that.
Yeah.
This part of the world has a lot of water. That's right. What we're all about along the coast here. Water, water everywhere.
Yeah.
And this railroad crosses over a lot of it, but it is a toxic mess. It's a toxic nightmare. The dirt's toxic. The ballast, that's the rocks underneath, it's filled with mud and toxins, and falling apart railroad ties are toxic, and the bridges. And so what we had here is a railroad that is getting a lot of money from the state and did part of the job already, and dodged being able to report to the public what were the environmental consequences, dodged even examining them. So we stepped in, and they wrote an environmental impact statement for, or impact report for a section, well, for the whole thing, for operations, and it's very hard to describe it because it's one of the most confusing projects I've ever worked on in my entire career. Because they say one thing and then they do another, the railroad authority. And
is that a quasi-governmental or is it private?
No, it's governmental. It is pretty crazy because the legislature set up this authority, granted them, you know, the right to run freight trains on it, and then said, well, but we're not going to give you any money. And we're also not going to be responsible for any of your we're not going to be liable for anything that you do. Now, that's strange. So there's been a lot of badly misspent money and a lot of environmental degradation associated with it. So we went after this railroad in a very simple California Environmental Quality Act lawsuit. I mean, we just wanted them to tell us, you know, and to have a plan that, you know, covered the toxic chemicals that would be disturbed when they go in and tear this railroad up and rebuild it. And they have just done, they have done everything in their power, I think, every conceivable thing to try to avoid talking about that. We've sued them in court. But they've taken us to federal court. They've argued in the state court twice. They're arguing that the case is moot, that we don't have, that we can't make this argument. It just goes on and on. Yeah. It's been extremely, it's been very resource intensive for our court system, for our organization and the others that we work with on this case. And next week, on Wednesday, we're going to be in court in a hearing in Marin Superior Court, where we're going to start maybe learning something about what the court has to say about all of what has been going on. And whether, you know, whether we're going to get an environmental report about the effects of deconstructing a 300-mile rail line and building a new one.
Exactly, a very old...
very old and very toxic, yes.
Interesting. So, and, and, of course, CEQA, they're trying to weaken it at the same time.
There was an effort on that part. There was actually one legislator that was the lead person and was really pushing to do a lot of CEQA reform. The governor came out and said, this is God's work. But then suddenly that legislator left retired from the legislature to take a job with Chevron.
Well, well, who knew, eh? Oh, my goodness.
That was one of the most, one of the more interesting political things in California lately.
Wow.
And the whole CEQA thing has sort of simmered down again because a lot of Democrats realize this is a good law. Actually, it needs to be strengthened, not
yes.
weakened.
Oh, my goodness. For grassroots people, I mean, it's literally the last thing you can cling to, you know.
That's right.
On a project, I know.
Basically, Arnold, California Environmental Quality Act is a democracy law that happens to be about the environment. But first of all, it's a democracy law. Before CEQA became law in California, you could wake up one morning with bulldozers plowing down the forest next to your house to build a resort. Oh, well, wow, that's happening. You know, CEQA came about because people were good and ticked off in California about having things happen and really world-changing things to them without them being able to have any notification or involvement or being able to say anything about it or try to improve it or anything. That is what this law grew from.
Yep.
It's a democracy law, and we need to remember that. It's not a slow business down law. It's not, in fact, it's the other way. If you write a good environmental impact report, if you do a good job of analyzing what's going to happen, if you make a good project, you're not going to have a problem.
Right.
But, you know, with CEQA, a lot of bad projects have gotten a lot better.
Right. At least
you can't really stop a project with CEQA. You can only make it better.
Try and make them a bit more honest.
Yes, that's
basically
what it's about.
Now, you really, I mean, talk about tilting at windmills. You go up against the biggest. I mean, PG&E you're up against, I see, about them spraying herbicides throughout California.
Mm-hmm.
What is that? What is going on there?
Well, you know, PG&E and all the places that they have transmission, which is a good, at least two-thirds of the state, they have, and even if the telephone lines are on a pole, the pole is basically owned by PG&E. And in order to run that electricity and get it onto your property or, you know, into your street or whatever, PG&E gets to have an easement through the property. And so their easement is so they can come on and maintain the infrastructure. And what they do throughout California, except a few places like Humboldt County, parts of Mendocino, Sonoma, I don't know if we've been able to really accomplish it in Sonoma County, but we've been able to stop PG&E from some of this. And what it is they'll come on to people's property or go along the roadside and spray the ground dead all around their poles. So if you look at, it's one of those things I was talking about earlier, it's the absence of what's there. So if you see a pole and it's, nothing's growing around the bottom of it, and they really saturate the ground a lot. There's been a lot of real violations, like spraying right next to people's wells, spraying right above creeks, spraying where school kids walk to get on the bus, all that kind of thing. So
and that one, because it's an easement, they're allowed to do it, basically.
Well,
is that it,
I don't know. That's never been tested adequately yet. It's questionable. Do they have the right to bring toxic chemicals onto your property, for example, to maintain their site when there's an alternative? Now, I know that we've been able in Humboldt County, but it's a constant battle. But we have a lot of people around Humboldt County who are really up in arms and alert to this.
Yeah.
But who have been able to get PG&E to then give them an advance letter. And then the people can opt in for the spraying if that's what they want to do. But if it's on their property, the timber companies, you know, they're always, like, given the green light. But the but this has been given a lot of people the opportunity to say, no, you can't do that.
Yeah.
But in most of California where PG&E operates, that's a constant battle. Wow. People come home from somewhere and find out that they've just sprayed around the bottom of the pole right near their well.
So you can, be totally organic and, use nothing. And
right.
This comes along.
PG&E is obnoxious in many other ways, too. For example, they have wooden poles. You know, they went somewhere and deforested that place and took the poles out and brought them and put them in the ground here in some kind of bizarre wood ritual of some sort. You know, it's like, this is our religion. Yeah. These trees, these denuded trees from somewhere else that we're going to stick in the ground here. Poisoned, very highly, extremely poisoned. So you never want to touch a telephone pole.
Ah.
And in fact, telephone poles discharge toxic chemicals into the soil around them. So everywhere that a wooden telephone pole is planted is a mini toxic waste site. And how much is in the ground depends on a lot of factors, but there's going to be some very toxic chemicals in the ground around every telephone pole.
And you're talking millions.
Millions
of poles.
And millions of them.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, right next to creeks, right in schoolyards. I'll never forget when I first became aware of this. I was in Oakland, walking through a neighborhood, and there was a little grammar school, and the kids were running over and tagging on the telephone pole. And it was just a big, old, juicy with toxic chemicals pole. And here are these little darling little children running over and tagging on it. It's just, oh, my goodness.
Oh, dear. Yeah. It becomes part of the background people don't even realize.
That's right. So yeah. PG&E is a bit of a monster in every way. PG&E and Caltrans are probably our two biggest monsters of the state.
Yeah, because they do the spraying along all the freeways and highways.
Right. Yeah. There's many things that these PG&E and Caltrans do that are offensive, but to the environment. And I mean, we like having electricity and we like driving on roads.
Right.
But we would like these organizations to be much more careful of the environment that they're doing it in.
Yeah, and there are methods to make it that way. They just haven't opted to go that way.
That's right.
Really, isn't it?
No. And there, I have to say, there's a bit of arrogance, possibly, from the size of those two organizations that, and the relative immunity, really heavy regulation.
Right, any repercussions of any sort, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, now, what's coming up on various, is there any special events, anything coming up you want to let people know about?
Not at the moment. The biggest special event we're looking at is this court hearing Wednesday in Marin County at 8:30 in the morning, where we're going to find out what's going to happen with our little simple CEQA case that blew up into the monster that it has been chasing us all around.
Yeah.
We used to have an event called the Organic Planet Festival, and we did that for 5 years. It was a lot of work and a lot of fun. Thousands and thousands of people went and learned about all kinds of things organic and listened to a lot of good music and had fun. We're not doing that now. So we really don't have any, we're not doing any big events. We're more involved in trying to help people throughout the area that need assistance in what they're doing. And also, though, at the same time, to follow all these actions and things that the government's allowing, comment on them, and try to improve them. And we do have some success in doing that sort of thing, but we're not doing events.
Yeah. How is it, obviously you've got a great amount of experience now in this area. How are you passing on that information? Are the younger generation picking it up? Are you being able to impart that?
One of the best and most rewarding things of this job has been working with young people. And in fact, our office, we had to move our office to Eureka a few years ago because of very, very tight rental market in Arcata, which has really opened up a lot, Arcata being the home of Humboldt State University.
Right.
So we're in the process right now, really, and it's pretty absorbing, of getting ourselves moved back to Arcata so we can take advantage of working with students. Because that's been one of the most rewarding things for me personally, but for our organization, it's been very important. Because we have former interns and, you know, people who were students who worked for us and learned as they worked about the issues we're working on and what it meant. And now they've gone out into the world, you know, all over the country. And I really think that's been one of the great things we've been able to do, is to inform very strongly some a large group, actually, of smart young people who are out there doing things now, like running wastewater treatment plants, working in government agencies, working as doctors, scientists, running other nonprofits and all that. Mm-hmm. And they all, many of them, I hear from many of them every year that then they say, you know what we did there, that really changed my view of the world. So I think that's been one of the great things we've been able to do.
Yes.
And we're still looking for somebody and hoping someone will step up to become more closely involved in CATS' future.
Hmm.
And we've had a number of people do that, but eventually they go on to another career. So we're hoping that maybe somebody will be like me and sort of accidentally, you know, get involved in this and find they spend their life on it.
Indeed. I hope so. And it's amazing work. And it's so desperately needed. Let everyone know your website again and phone number and info, Patty.
All right. So we hope that people use our website and both to contact us and to get information. And, you know, and they can go over there and put in wine grape, and up will come that report you were talking about, Arnold.
Yeah.
And also they can, you know, just put in any term and see what we've been doing with it, if anything. But it's at Alternatives to Toxics. It's Alternatives, the number 2, Toxics, TOXICS.org.
Right.
And we welcome you there. And also the phone number for our office is 707-445-5100. So please, if there's any information that people need, if there's something going on that they want to know what to do about, if they've heard about something they think we need to know about, mm-hmm. please contact us. That's how our organization exists. That's how we do what we do. It's right through our members and the public that care.
Exactly. And the $20 membership helps you achieve all that.
Absolutely. Well, the membership is important. Of course, we rely on donations to exist. We're a nonprofit.
Mm-hmm.
And the membership is very important because people, once they become members, then they have an involvement, and then they are like the eyes out there,
right.
The eyes and the ears for what's going on. And
exactly.
That is very important for us.
Well, thank you so much, Patty Clary of Californians for Alternatives to Toxics. Keep up the great work. Thank you for doing this.
Thank you so much. It was really a pleasure spending this time. And talk to you later.
Thank you, Patty.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.